Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up today, and I hope you enjoyed the show. This story was first published on May 19th of 2009 under the headline Oregon Years and Oregon Flour Mills Helped Hoover Prevent Mass Starvation. Here we go. Between the tiny Oregon town of Shedd and the Interstate 5 freeway is an old flour mill, the oldest water-powered grist mill in the state, and one of only four remaining. It's called Boston Flouring Mills, also known as Thompson's Mills, after a former owner. Should you visit the mill, staff members there will proudly call your attention to a signature on a land sale deed dating from 1891. It's the signature of one of the two witnesses required for the sale, and its legality is a bit questionable because the signer was still a minor. It was a 17-year-old office boy at the Oregon Land Company which handled the transaction when the mill was sold. He signed his name Bert Hoover. Now, not many people know it, but Bert, known when he was younger as Bertie Hoover and when older as Herbert Hoover, spent most of his teenage years in the Willamette Valley. After the death of his parents, he arrived when he was 11 to live with his uncle John Minthorne in Newburgh. A few years later, the Minthornes moved to Salem to launch the Oregon Land Company. Hoover was 17 when he went off to college, becoming a member of the first class at Stanford. A few years later, he participated in that famous college's first ever graduation ceremony and sent out into the world armed with a geology degree and a net worth of $40, looking every inch the world beater that he was. He'd never again sign his name Bert on any legal document, and he'd never come back to Oregon to live either. 20 years later, Hoover played an even bigger role in Boston Mill, though. He brought it business. Lots of business. The place was running 24 hours a day. The reason? People were starving in war-torn Europe. By this time, Hoover had taken his $40 and turned it into millions. He was the most highly paid engineer in the world, and he was at the peak of his career. But when the war broke out, Hoover dropped his career and launched himself on a mission to feed the hungry in the war zones of Belgium and northern France, where millions would have starved without his intervention, because the warring parties were squabbling over whose responsibility it was to feed them. When the U.S. entered the war, he took over as a sort of domestic food czar, using public relations tools to get folks to substitute corn and oats and barley for more nutrient-dense foods like wheat and beef so that those could be sent overseas. And after the war, he spearheaded efforts that saved millions all over Europe, but especially in the defeated German and Austrian lands and in Russia, from starving. Throughout that time, of course, Hoover needed the Boston Mill to produce as much flour as it possibly could. And that's just what it, and virtually every other mill like it across the country, did. By the end of it all, Hoover had prevented the miserable death of millions of people. Hundreds of millions. It was this success that would propel him to his ill-starred term as president a decade later, which unfortunately is what he's chiefly remembered for today. But it's worth remembering that had Hoover not grown up in Oregon, he probably would not have gone to Stanford. Without going to Stanford, he probably wouldn't have become an engineer, and without engineering skills, he would not have been able to direct the biggest humanitarian relief effort in human history. Key sources in this story have included works by Lee Nash and Herbert Hoover. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you're listening to is a reading from one of roughly 330 newspaper columns published between 2008 and today. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, a fleet of Pinterest boards, and a ton of great historic photos and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to its sources, all accessible via our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for future episodes? Email me at fj@offbeatoregon.com. You can also ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning at around 6 a.m., so the next one will be on your device and ready to go in a couple of days at most. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today, and if applicable, tomorrow, with good stuff. Bye now.